War is a resort to methods of force rather than negotiation or arbitration to settle controversial questions between nations. The latter method breaks down when confidence in the word of one nation is lost by another. Then the method of brute force is resorted to for a time, while the method of those who pride themselves in intellectual attainments and perfection of language is cast aside. In view of the fact that the extravagant practice of war may and often does lead to excesses and unethical conduct on the part of all participants, and that war is an abhorrent thing to all nations, what impels any nation to adopt the extreme measures of war? Underlying the idealism of nearly every war is the cold reality of economic competition. Control of the raw materials is an important factor in the struggle, and minerals form a large part of these raw materials. The existence of nations of haves and nations of have-nots results in the deplorable reactions on the part of the latter to balance the account and, if possible, to turn the tables. This gives rise to a war cycle, which recurs at intervals to test all the resources of nations for survival and the much-desired victory over the foe. The importance of this factor as a cause of war was recognized by the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Great Britain when, in a statement now known as the Atlantic Declaration, they made known to the world a number of common principles on which they and their countries with them based their hopes for a better future for all. The fourth item on the list is a promise to allow all nations, great and small, victor or vanquished, access on equal terms to the trade and to the raw materials of the world which are needed for their economic prosperity. If this can be accomplished without too many reservations, we will have gone a long way toward permanent peace. Peace is for the future. Today, it is war, with no prospect of an end until one side or the other is vanquished. The recent great developments in all of the sciences are being applied to the successful prosecution of the war more and more. The science of geology is not an exception. Military problems requiring the aid of geologists include such matters of broad strategy and planning as appraising types of terrain or shoreline conditions where military or naval landing operations may be anticipated, especially shore features, coastal currents, inland topography, the soil, underground and surface water conditions. Also appraising the influence of bedrock and the weather on engineering construction. These factors affect troop movements, maintenance of supply lines, water supply, and the establishment of airfields, munition dumps and dugouts and air raid shelters. Geologists are helpful in selecting areas in the United States that duplicate expected foreign battle terrain in which to test equipment and train troops. For example, the deserts of Libya are somewhat similar to the deserts in the vicinity of Monument Valley and Rainbow Natural Bridge in Utah. Mineral industries are important military objectives. To efficiently conduct the war, it is necessary to know the distribution and kind of mineral resources that need to be attacked or defended, and their relative importance to the enemy and ourselves. These are strategic minerals indeed, and many famous mineral localities have been involved in military operations already. During military operations, geologists are useful in reading maps and appraising unfamiliar terrain by a study of aerial photographs. Because they have studied the processes by which topographic features are developed, and because of their familiarity with maps geologists are perhaps better qualified than others to make the quick judgments of the nature of the terrain that are sometimes required for military purposes. Geological maps, which are available for many regions, give much information about the terrain. The geology of many regions, especially in arid country, is revealed by airplane photographs or by direct observation from the air, permitting advanced knowledge of the rockiness of the soil, the depth to bedrock, and other features that may be of military importance. Professor William Allen, in the radio address of May 2nd of this series, told you about the part played by engineers in the armed forces. This part is so large that the present conflict has been called an engineer's war. The engineers are aided in their task by the scientists, the physicists, the chemists, the biologists, the astronomer, and also the geologist. Engineering geology deals with the geological problems that arise in connection with the construction of fortifications and gun emplacements, temporary and permanent airports, and subsurface structures such as hangars, munition dumps, trenches, dugouts, landmines, and underground storage tanks for oil and gasoline. It also deals with water supplies and water problems, both surface water and groundwater, and the choice, construction, and maintenance of roads. A splendid account of the use of geology on the battlefields of the last World War was published in 1920. By the United States Geological Survey as professional paper number 128, The Use of Geology on the Western Front by Alfred H. Brooks. His conclusion was that the general principles of geology and their applications to war must be made a part of military education. However, our country has not acted on this advice based on the lessons learned at great price in the military struggles of 1914 in 1918. I do not believe there is a course in geology at the Military Academy at West Point. Foreign countries, notably the Russians and the Germans, have paid some attention to the subject of military geology. The Russians, perhaps even more than the Germans, which may have something to do with their marvelous resistance that amazed not only their enemies, but their allies as well. There are a number of military duties not strictly geological in nature in which the services of geologists might be used. Map interpretation is a special skill required in all geologic work. Consequently, geologists could quickly develop skill in compiling aerial photograph maps and preparing topographic maps. Many geologists are experienced teachers, and all have had thorough training in map interpretation, and therefore might be useful at service schools. Geologists are experienced in compiling material, preparing maps, and writing, and could therefore contribute to preparation of guidebooks on the physical features, accessibility, and water resources of projected theaters of operation. Geologists trained in geophysics would be useful in sound and radio ranging, signaling, and detecting both on land and at sea. Because trained to observe colors and textures of rock and soil and landforms, geologists should be adaptable to detection of camouflage, especially when on a large scale. Two armies fight the war for every combatant nation. The army at the front, consisting of soldiers, sailors, and marines, and the army in the rear, the civilian army of production. One cannot function without the other. Geologists play their parts in both armies. The most important civilian geological duty is to determine the sources of minerals which the demands of the military situation make necessary. Today, it is in the field of economic geology that geologists are making their greatest direct contribution to the war effort. In conclusion, I would like to call your attention to three timely pamphlets dealing with geology in the war, copies of which are available to those interested. Their titles are War, Geologists and Engineering by Sidney Page, senior geologist, North Atlantic Division, U.S. Engineers. The utilization of geology and geologists in wartime, prepared under the direction of the Committee on War Effort of the Geological Society of America, and bibliography of military geology and geography, compiled by Professor W.H. Bucher, Chairman, Division of Geology and Geography of the National Research Council, assisted by Kurt Lowe and Genevieve Cobb. Requests for these pamphlets should be addressed to the Geological Society of America, Dr. H. R. Aldridge, Secretary, 419 West 117th Street, New York City. A final word. The professor of geology does his part, too. For if there are no teachers of geology, there can be no geologists.
Thank you very much, Professor O'Connell.